Welcome to Breaking Form, a podcast of poetry and culture. I'm Aaron Smith.
And I am James Allen Hall. For those listening for the first time,
we do literary games.
We revisit books that we love.
We gossip.
We do. We interview.
We shade.
We laugh.
And we are not for everyone. Mm-mm.
Good evening, Aaron Smith.
It is evening.
It is. Yeah, let evening come on my face.
I was laughing the other day about how you said some writer took turds on their chest. Like, I was thinking the other day, I was going to go back through and think of all the fucked up things that we've said about people. And like, yeah, so maybe not.
I don't even remember that.
Let it be. So anyway.
I know it was not about the writer who joins us again this week on the podcast, Jericho Brown, who is the author of three books of poetry, including most recently The Tradition, which won the Pulitzer Prize. His first book was Please. His second book is The New Testament. And Jericho teaches at Emory, where he directs the creative writing program. Jericho's most recent project is The Selected Shepherd. These are poems of Reginald Shepherds from all of his books. And it's just out from the University of Pittsburgh Press.
And he kicks off today's show. We continue by reading The Gods at 3 a.m. And I hope you enjoy the conversation that we have.
The Gods at 3 a.m. The foolish gods are doing poppers while they sing along. They're taking off their white t-shirts and wiping the sweat from their foreheads with them. The gods have tattoos of skulls and roses on their shoulders, perhaps a pink triangle above the left nipple. For them, there's hope. The gods are pausing to light cigarettes while they dance. They're laughing at private jokes while the smoke machine comes on. One of the gods told you they put talcum powder in the artificial fog, then walked away. How could anyone breathe talcum powder? But it makes their skin shine with the sweat and smell of cigarettes and obsession. Don't try to say you didn't know the gods were always white. The statues told you that. The gods don't say hello. And when you ask them how they are, the gods say they don't know. The gods are drunk and don't feel like talking now, but you can touch their muscled backs when they pass. The gods in backwards baseball caps say, free love. They say, this is the time, and disappear into another corner of the bar. They're always moving to another song. The gods with their check flannel shirts unbuttoned under open motorcycle jackets, hard nipples and ghost white briefs above the waistbands of their baggy jeans say, get here. The gods say, soon. And you just keep dancing because you don't know the words. You hope the gods will notice small devotions and smile, maybe a quick thumbs up if you're good. The gods whose perfect instances of bodies last only for the instant or until last call, and then they disappear into the sidewalk. Gods who are splendid without meaning to be, who do they need to impress, say, this could be the magic. They say, live for tonight, and then the lights come on.
What I love about Reginald Shepherd's interview with Charles Rowell is Charles Rowell's kind of given it to him a little bit about proper English and lack and why this Greek mythology is the lens through which you are talking about desire. Why not European? Why not these kinds of narratives, whatever, right? Like, why this?
Yeah.
And when we were talking about lack before, it strikes me that, like, especially American English is the lack of English. Especially for British English, like, we really are the lack, right? And Shepherd says in that interview, like, but I was always trying to get the language precise and correct, and people were always telling me I was wrong because I was right. right? Like I sounded too white. He says in the interview, and then he's right. Yeah. And then he says this thing about Greek mythology. He says, I think the world of Greek myth is very plastic and capacious, but at the same time, it has a great formal elegance. And that is my ideal for poetry, to have both that elasticity and capaciousness of emotional and intellectual content, but at the same time to remain shapely, to contain that force within form.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So,
yeah.
And no, right? I mean, so for me.
Talk about the no and the yes, whatever you like.
Well, yeah, I mean, James, and you and I have talked about this many times, right? If we had gone to Brown or Iowa or what is it, school in Colorado, if we'd gone to Denver, do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
We would be very different poets from who we would have been if we had gone to Hopkins.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't go to any of those schools. So, you know,
we just not.
Turned out to be the best poets of our generation. But so.
despite.
Despite, honey.
Is there a good school in Iowa?
Well, yeah, I don't know because I've never been to Iowa. Anyway, seriously, more seriously. I think part of what becomes the quote unquote responsibility, which is a hard word to deal with when we're talking about writing,
right,
of the writer is to go on and know more than what you have been taught, such that your palette for beauty changes and such that your palette for influence and imitation changes. Do you see what I mean? And I do think that Shepherd was doing a great deal of that throughout his career after that interview with Charles Ryle.
Yeah.
And I think you can see that happen in the poems. You have to remember that the interview with Charles Ryle is before the second book. Like the second book isn't out yet. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so this is a person talking about whiteness after having had a first book.
Yeah.
And knowing that he is going to be sucking white cock every chance he gets.
And he says that in the interview too.
Yeah, he said, I'm not trying to let him have it about that. Like,
No.
He's on the front about that. Yeah. But my friend Henry Walker had an argument with Reginald Shepherd once about Reginald Shepherd saying something about how, you know, black men are not interested in him, that black men don't, if black men would talk to him, he would talk to them. And, you know, Henry's response to that was, but you run. Run after these white guys like a dog chasing a car. You know what I mean?
You are running after Greek myth. You're running after Western civilization in order to understand your desire.
But that is also why it is so interesting to me, particularly as one of 1 trillion black poets making use of Greek myth in their poems.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And I know other myths. Do you know what I'm saying? I have yet to write the poem that includes, you know, Papa Legba. Do you know what I'm saying? I just don't, I haven't done it yet. I'm not saying it's not going to happen, but it hasn't happened yet. And I don't think of myself, of course I don't think of myself, so maybe I am, as some kind of a self-hating black poet. Do you understand what I mean? As a matter of fact, I think of myself as a poet who's always trying to prop up black poetry. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
And other poets of color and queer poets, et cetera. Do you follow what I'm saying?
I do.
And so I'm interested in the fact that he lays this stuff down and questions it at the same time that he lays it down. And I think that's why it is perfect for being written about. Because there's actually something there to discuss and to talk about.
And I think he had to write something like The Gods at 3 a.m. so he could then write a book like Otherhood.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So thinking about like the, you know, the range and the change through his years, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that, I mean, Otherhood still has his 2 Apollo poems, something like that in them. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
There's Greek myth in every book he writes.
But it's different. It feels different to me in that book.
It gets bigger. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you know what? I don't know if it goes with anything, but Marilyn Hacker blurbed 2 of his books. I love that she said, talks on this book about finding him when she was at the Kenyon Review. And I love that he was obsessed with this formalist this lesbian formalist, mm-hmm. you know, white woman, mm-hmm. and they had this friendship. And like I feel like it's like, you know, again, she blurbs one in the next book, she blurbs it again. It's like he didn't care. He wasn't going to mm-hmm. do that thing where, you know, I have to like find different people. He also won the Amy Lowell and didn't travel because he had debt and decided he was going to, he should pay his debt off. How could he run around, you know, another, you know, outside United States? Like he was kind of, I think he was the first one where you, like after he did it, it got everyone like, you must leave, you yeah. know? So I don't know why.
I think it's the Reginald Shepherd rule.
Yeah, so I'm not.
It's his rule. Yeah.
I'm not sure why I thought of all that when you all were talking. I'm sorry. I think it's making me. This book like makes me a little emotional. Like yeah, when yeah. I and like it makes me like think about just different things about him. There's a story with Edo Chester told me, and Edo Chester, you know, used to edit Pitt and rest in peace. And he told me once, he said, yeah, when we were at AWP, Reginald came in, I was sitting down, he walked over, he gave me a big hug, and then he kissed me on the forehead. And there is like this, I don't know, there is a part of Reginald, I think, too, and maybe everyone, that's like the little kid with a lot of love to give at the same time. Mm-hmm. Like his intellect was so, he was so smart and good and had these big things, but he was always trying to figure out, it seemed like to me too, he's always trying to figure out love.
I mean, I think that does make sense. And I think that has a lot to do. I think it points to him always reaching outside of himself, right? And there's a way that Shepherd thinks of the reaching outside of himself is similar to the chasing after. I mean, yeah. I respect Reginald Shepherd's friendships. I respect mm-hmm. the fact that he admired the poets he admired, right? Mm-hmm. But there is something in that that has to do with a reaching after, you know, this running after this lesbian formalist poet or mm-hmm. you know, which, you know, maybe I shouldn't say running after because I do think that relationship was very much a meeting of minds kind of relationship mm-hmm. of peers. But I also think that Reginald Shepherd was interested in formalism because he wasn't a formal poet. Mm-hmm. And so that's just how he was. You know, he was going to make use of form in poems, obviously. Mm-hmm. But his ideas were much more, he was much more interested. Like he probably knew everything there was to know about form during that friendship with Marilyn Hacker because that's what he was after in that moment. The question becomes, is what happens when all of the reaching is outside? There's nothing wrong with a poet reaching outside, but yeah. can you do some of that reaching from within? And if mm-hmm. you do some of that reaching from within, what do you end up with? And I think he was scared. I mean, I'm not a biographer. Let me say this. When you get to that last book, Red Clay Weather, I think that's the book in which Reginald Shepherd is reaching within. Mm-hmm. And I think the reach within comes up with a different type of a poem because two things happen. One is we have to find out more about his mother, more about his relationship with his mother and her boyfriends who were horrible towards him. And I think we sort of see not just what he was running after, but what he was running from. And I think, I mean, you know, I'm just glad my parents raised me. You know, I'm glad my Black parents raised me in whatever Blackness I ended up with. But I do think that what Reginald Shepherd thought of when he thought of Blackness had to do with a kind of neglect and poverty that no matter how much he could be introduced to a Blackness that has nothing to do with neglect and poverty, he could not shake. And I think he spends a lot of that book, many very long prose poems in that book that I included in the selected. It's the reason why the selected is 163 pages and not 133 pages, because that book has a few very long prose poems and I include all of them because I do think there's a change in thinking. I want to read you this poem that'll give you an example of what I mean. My mother dated Otis Redding. My mother is laughing in the hallway with her friends I don't like much. Maybe the numbers runner who gives me dollars to go see movies while they fuck, a mattress propped in the doorway where there's no door. I know what's fuck and dick and pussy. They're tipsy, she says. They're having a good time. Don't I deserve a good time now and then? I'm looking through the telescope I just got from a catalog while they break out the Tangeray. I don't know what that is. They're putting on some records. It's 1970, Nixon's president. There's a dock in one song. And I don't know how to whistle, but I know what's a dock and a bay. There aren't many stars because of the streetlights. It's the Bronx. The singer sounds sad. He's dead. My mother says, you know, I went to high school with him back in Macon. And everybody says, I'll bet. And she laughs. I wish I was his son. I wish they'd all go home. It's late and I just want to go to bed, but she just wants to have a good time. I turn my telescope on the Puerto Rican couple fighting, kissing in a window across the concrete courtyard. Three parrots escaped from the loading dock, freezing in a trash tree. It's November. Neighborhood kids throwing rocks at each other from bicycles. My mother standing in the hallway with a paper cup of Tanqueray, or lying in the hallway in a pool of her own shit.
Yeah, it's a great poem.
It's a good poem.
Listening to it, I mean, you know, I want to go back to memory. I want to save my mother. And yet I have to confront the fact that she was laying in a pool of her own shit.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, you feel just like the inevitability of the ending of that poem and how much he doesn't want it to arrive.
Yeah. He does not. I mean, the whole, what's interesting to me about that poem, I have to say this, I think he has been avoiding writing that line for his fucking whole life. Books. Yeah. He's like, which by the way, is the most inspirational thing. Like, that feeling that I have about that line lets me know that I will always have something else to uncover, to discover, mm-hmm. to write about. Do y'all know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. That no matter how close I am to the marrow of the bone, I could still go deeper, you know? I have to say, the poem captures when these housing projects went up, they were designed without doors, without doors on the rooms, without doors in the closets. Like, it was very important that the people who would have to live in these housing projects understand that they would not ever have or deserve privacy. Oh. And this is a poem about racism, yeah. about like institutionalized systematic mess that leads to how you are able to raise your children, how you are able to enjoy being in a family. Do you know what I'm saying? Uh-huh. I mean, and that's why Nixon gets brought up in the poem. Do y'all know what I mean? Do you know what I'm saying? I'm really interested in that kind of, when I say travel, that's what I mean mm-hmm. about these poems by Reginald Shepherd.
And I have to tell you, like, I'm a pretty gullible Libra, but if you told me that that poem you just read was the long lost cousin of the poem Again by Jericho Brown. I'm so sick of it. Another awful father scarring this page right? Yeah.
One of the things that I have enjoyed about putting this book together is figuring out just how much the influence is in me in a very subconscious way.
Yeah.
Even earlier, I read this poem where he says, they say, and then he says something they say, something the gods say. Then right after that, he says, they say. And I noticed I wrote something very similar in a poem called Say Thank You, Say I'm Sorry, where the grocery store workers say, they say, and then I say, they say, you know, mm-hmm. and there's something about the intonation and the repetition. I wasn't even, when I wrote that poem, I wasn't looking at Reginald Shepherd poems. I wasn't thinking about his poems, but his poems are in me in that way such that they can come out. And I have to tell y'all, I don't know if y'all have done any of this lately, but if you go back at this point in your writing career and read the poets that you were reading when you were 25 years old that you loved.
You start blushing.
You are going to be amazed at how much you stole. Yeah. How much you've stolen in your last book. You haven't read these people in 20 years. You know what I'm saying? Or maybe you have, but not in that same.
Teachers.
Yeah.
Oh, we should play a little game. We should all say, like, thank you and fill in a blank right now.
Just can't say thank you, India. Like the
No, right. You can't. Yeah, no. You can't.
I can definitely say thank you, Reginald Shepherd. That's for sure. Yeah.
Maybe we should just end there and just say thank you, Reginald Shepherd.
Yeah, thank you, Reginald Shepherd. Thank you, Reginald Shepherd. I'm so, you know, thank y'all so much for this. And Aaron, it's so wonderful to do this with you. I'm so glad James asked me.
Thank you for caring enough about our little raunchy side podcast.
but I do want to say this, and I do your raunchy side podcast, which he would have loved. And y'all know that. The fact that this can exist in the way that it does now, and that you can have these very like serious and silly and queer conversations about contemporary poetry and with contemporary poets, he would have been freaking the fuck out with glee.
That makes me really happy and really sad.
And for me, this is what, I mean, I have to tell you, I'm going to tell y'all this thing and y'all can keep it or not. And I know, James, the show's over. But I have to tell you this thing. When I was working on this book, I felt completely bothered by Reginald Shepherd. You know, whenever you're doing anything that you're doing, you got to do that thing and everything else you got to do. And so, you know, I got the assignment to do the book and I said, okay, I'll do it. And it just takes time. I mean, I met every deadline, but whenever I wasn't working on this book, I felt like Reginald Shepherd was in my house fucking shit up. And I would just be like, what is wrong? What's wrong with the stove, Reginald? Why did this light, just bought this light bulb. How is the light going out, Reginald? Oh my God, my heat's not on, Reginald. Do you know what I'm saying? And I literally, and I didn't think about it, but it was just like, I just felt, and I bought this house and I was all excited about the house and everything was great. And for like a year or two, and then I was working on this book and suddenly it was like the house was falling apart. And I didn't think that had anything to do with Reginald Shepherd exactly, but I just knew like his poems were all over the house. And my friend, the writer, Daniel Black, he has this new book called Black on Black, which is a book of essays, which y'all have to check out. Y'all should have him on the show. He literally came over my house and did a ceremony because he said, Jericho, what's going on? I'm like, I don't know. It's like my house is attacking me every time I come here. He's like, what have you been doing in the house to make it attack you? I was like, I'm not doing this. And he said, well, who's here other than you? I said, I stay by myself. He said, no, somebody else is here. I said, do you think it's Reginald Shepherd? He did this whole West African libation ceremony for me here at my house. And he was like, you just need to have a talk with him. And I had to tell Reginald Shepherd, like I felt like a crazy person doing it. Like, hey, I need you to calm down and let me finish this thing. I promise you, I'll make you the thing you'll be proud of. So the reason that I'm saying this, Jamie, I know you said it makes you happy and a little sad too, but I really believe that whatever Reginald Shepherd is very excited for this, not just about the book. I think he's glad about the book. I mean, he's a poet. He's glad to be revived in any way he can get revived. But I think he's really particularly excited that the three of us got to come on this particular platform and talk about his work. I think that kind of happiness has to be felt.
Yeah.
Whether you're dead or alive. That's all I have to say.
Hey, pickle.
Hey, tomatoes.
Asexual fruit.
I object to being called a topping because God knows I am not a top.
I didn't think pickle was a topping.
It can be used
for topping. But I don't. Tomatoes made to be entered.
Well, squish, squish, welcome to the fact check.
Yeah. Dare I eat a peach in a porn?
Oh, my God. Well, welcome to the fact check, Aaron Smith.
An OnlyFans page where you just seductively eat peaches and tomatoes.
That's what we should do.
It would totally get a following. Yeah.
Yeah. Don't you think it would?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm down for it.
And then someone can take their foot and squish it onto your cheeks while you're doing it.
But which one do you want? Do you want to be the peach or the tomato?
I want to eat them. I don't want to be one.
Right. No, I know. But which one do you want to eat on the camera? We're going to do it together. We're going to decide by side.
We're going to name you Peach and me Tomato.
I'll be Miss Peaches.
Okay. I'm leaving all of this. Okay. Fact check.
Well, the first thing I have to say is that I looked back at a previous Breaking Form episode where we discussed the gods at 3 a.m. because I wanted to include that in the show notes. And I found that I had typed the gods at 2 a.m.
Oh,
can you believe it?
And well, he has a lot of timestamps in the poems that we love,
which is true. And so anyway, I have corrected that. I can't believe it was in Mona in the Corner, one of our favorite episodes.
Wow. Yes. I hope it didn't mess up Mona's timing.
Nothing messes up that bitch's timing.
Man, it's like, I gotta get home. I thought I had another hour.
She's got her cucumbers and her OnlyFans, and she is fine.
Yeah, she's not afraid of a pickle.
Not at all.
She's the Chick-fil-A.
No, she's not.
Or pickle in the sandwich. So the Amy Lowell Traveling Scholarship page lists Reginald Shepherd as receiving the fellowship in 1994-95 and as having resigned. Neither one of us know if he gave the money back. I just had always heard that he said he didn't feel justified in spending money traveling around Europe when he owed money. So I don't know, but we officially know that he resigned.
And Jericho mentions a figure from voodoo traditions named Papa Legba. These are traditions found in Haiti, Dominican Republic, and Louisiana.
And Marilyn Hacker blurbed Angel Interrupted and Otherhood. And she also blurbed The New and Selected that Jericho edited.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's a nice little return. Jericho also mentions his friend Daniel Black. And the book of essays he mentions is called Black on Black, on Our Resilience and Brilliance in America. And we'll link to an NPR review in the show notes.
Wonderful.
And that's it. That's all the facts.
Well, we'll get our OnlyFans up and going. You all can watch us eat and be eaten.
I think Marilyn Hacker will be our first follower.
Maybe it's an OnlyFans where Mona's just always in the corner masturbating. No matter what time of day you go on.
With a legume.
It's on a loop. It's just always on a loop, whatever you like. It's just...
Like we take Mona to the Kmart and we have to like hurry her by the little seahorses, you know, the little rides.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Do you remember outside of like the Kmart?
Yes, but I don't know what it has to do with Mona in the corner when there's like seahorses. Because
she's like, I just want one ride. Give me one quarter.
Then she's not allowed to do laundry either. Okay, bye.
Hey, everyone. If you enjoyed today's Breaking Form, review us with 5 stars on Apple. Please follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Breaking Form Pod. And we'd love it if you'd support us by buying our books. Links are in the show notes. And remember, we're not for everyone.
Now that's all I have to say.